This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a podcast of Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Australia's only LGBTI program focused on the horror and sci-fi community.
What does it mean to be a witch?
Well, as a believer in the material world and a psychiatrist to boot, I'm convinced that the current spread of belief in magic and the occult is part of mental illness. Bad luck isn't brought by broken mirrors, but by broken minds.
Crazy. Crazy. Oh, let's start this, shall we? Let's start this interview. This is Sonia for Sci-Fi and Scream here on Joy 94.9. And I have in the studio, so I have Alexandra Haller-Nicholas back. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
It's the longest intro ever.
Boy, we had a very different conversation.
Wasn't that odd? I mean, I did not believe it with his passing. I was like, nah, that's got to be a hoax. You know how they get those terrible hoaxes.
I still haven't listened to Black Star. Can't do it.
I've listened to two tracks, but I can't go all the way through.
Are you recording?
Yes, I am.
Because we can actually tie. That was the last time we talked. Was for
That's
Bowie.
True. Yeah,
Bowie and René Werner Fassbinder and Argento were drinking a lot in Munich during the filming of Suspiria. And if I could be, you know, that question, like if you could go back in history,
do you think
to any time
something went on there? Three Graces.
Well, Udo Kier was living with Fassbinder at the time that he was filming Suspiria. He has that great little cameo in Suspiria with that wonderful line, bad luck doesn't come from broken mirrors but broken minds. And I have this idea that Udo Kier, Fassbinder, Bowie and Argento, after filming Suspiria, would just all go out to you know, like full-on
Bond.
Like Oktoberfest kind of beer drinking Munich beer house. That's where I would go.
You would go to that?
I would go. Not even just to hang out with them, just to what would that conversation be?
Mind-boggling.
It'd be good.
It'd be transatlantic for sure. It would be really interesting. Really interesting. Witches. Male witches all in the same room.
Too much magic.
If you think about it.
Too much magic.
You know, they're going about women being witches, but there's some witchy men. And pop culture
definitely.
History, and I think you've got it. Those are the ones. Do we know the date of that hanging out?
That would have been 76. Yeah. 76, I think.
You need to get the date, though.
Okay.
Because when we get the TARDIS.
To get my time machine
exactly,
accurate.
Exactly.
It would be awful if I turned up at that beer house at another night that was just a bunch
dear.
Of drunks.
Yeah, wrong ones. Oops.
Yeah, you missed out on the good witches.
Yeah. That's David Bowie's roadie and friends. And that guy, he worked on the Suspiria. Look, that might have to do.
The guy that held the boom mic, he worked hard.
How old was Asia when that was all going on?
She was little. She has a beautiful story.
She has got it, yeah.
I think she's born 74, 75 off the top of my head,
right.
Maybe even earlier. But she was little. She has a beautiful story about seeing that film as a young child, so about 8 or 9 years old for the first time. And you know, all of this, won't somebody think of the children when it comes to horror movies?
Oh, yes.
She saw it as a kid and she just, I mean, and if you think about it, it's totally a fairy tale, which is how it was made. And that's totally how she read it.
It's like David Lynch's daughter, Jennifer. She was pretty much lived in the set at where Eraserhead was made.
I think there's something quite sweet about that. Like something kind
She's
of a legacy.
She's fine. We loved Boxing Helena, didn't we? Yeah. We were reminiscing about the last time that we did this, the last time we chatted. It was last year. Mm. It was the David Bowie. David Bowie is. And certainly a lot has happened with his passing. And
David Bowie was.
Exactly. That's the next.
Changed grammar.
I know. It's just a very bizarre time, 2016 already, and lots of interesting things coming up. I've got my Ghostbusters t-shirt on, by the way, because that has, at this point in time, the first trailer has hit and the online community is going off. And I just love all these people who say, oh, I don't like this. This is like, it's not as good as the original. Get over yourselves.
Just
please. It's Saturday Night Live at the end of the day. And they are the Saturday Night Live women.
I'm very pro the idea of an all-women Ghostbusters. But I have to say that my dream all-women Ghostbusters is just four Annie Potts.
Oh, wow.
We have the CG to do that. Like, we can do it. Like, even back from then. Like, I just want four Annie Potts.
They did it with Michael Keaton, didn't they? Back in the 80s.
Let's do it. Why not? Like, so I'm not against this, but to me, that would be the optimum level of excitement for me.
I love Kristen Wiig, and I think, she's just excellent.
You know, she fell off my radar until Nasty Baby. And
you
then I was
like Nasty Baby?
Love Sebastian Nasty Baby. Silver. He's amazing. Well, Magic is, I think, one of the best horror films made in the last 10 years.
And
I mean,
best,
I think he's a genius.
Films about bipolarism and if it's schizophrenia, I'm not 100%.
So much going on in that film.
Amazing.
And the way that it leaves the ending open.
That yellow really that yellow raincoat.
Beautiful. Just beautiful. An iconic
Juno
horror.
Temple. And look at her. I mean,
she's somebody whose career
here's
I went
the Bowie
back
connection.
As well. Yep. The Julian Temple.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Absolute beginners. Everyone hates that film except for me.
I love that film.
Really?
I love that film. The dancing on a typewriter.
Well, you can stay. No, I love it too. It's hilarious. And Patsy Kinsett. I love Patsy. Mm-hmm.
I suspect that Absolute Beginners was
Where
a little bit ahead of its time.
Yeah, so ahead of its time.
It's a hot mess, but aren't we all? You know,
it was the 80s, wasn't it? Everything was a pretty damn
mess.
Jeez. After the 70s, what could you do? And speaking of the 70s, back on track, kind of, 1977, of course, and 1976, but Suspiria, and we're talking about your book, finally.
Yeah.
It's happened. Tell us about this.
It has. I've written, my third book has just come out, and it's a monograph. It's the first English language full book, I believe, on Dario Argento's classic Italian horror film, Suspiria.
Woo.
So I'm very excited. It's been a kind of project.
How long has it been?
Let me see. Probably about two or three years.
Wow.
So I've been sitting with this for a while. I mean, the film's been sitting with me forever. You know,
we've been waiting forever for you to do this.
But it was a joy. My first two previous books were both, again, on horror film or exploitation film. The first one was on rape revenge film and the second one was on found footage horror film. And they were more survey books, so they covered entire categories or subgenres.
Yeah, there's a lot
films.
There to cover.
Yeah, so they were really about watching a whole bunch of films and then talking about what I found they had in common or what they didn't have in common, which, funnily enough, ended up being more interesting.
Mm.
This book was totally different. So my background is as an academic. So those books were a little more academic-leaning, but this was my first sort of non-academic non-fiction book. And it was also dedicated to just one film. So instead of watching 300 movies, I just had to watch 300 times. That's exactly it. And it's a joy. I mean, it's a film that I just love.
Can you tell us a bit about the film for those horror virgins out there?
Yeah,
it's time to, you know,
it's one of those
pop your cherry, and you might as well with Suspiria.
It's one of those rare films that talking about plot doesn't help. And this has actually been one of the most interesting things about writing about it, because the plot's very simple and straightforward. It's a fairy tale. Dario Argento wanted to make a kind of live-action Disney film.
Mm.
So Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Fantasia, that kind of idea. So it's about a young girl, an American girl, played by Jessica Harper, an American actress who was in Phantom of the Opera, the wonderful Brian De Palma film. And on the back of that, she came to Europe to make this film with Argento. She plays Susie Bannion, a young American ballet dancer, who comes to Germany to go to the famed Freiburg Academy, the ballet school. And she arrives there one stormy night and finds strange things, and people are going missing and strange things are happening. What is the mystery of this film? And The mystery, of course, isn't a mystery because the soundtrack by the very famous Goblin prog rock band Goblin, who do a really iconic soundtrack that they played live at Acme, actually, as a live score to this a couple of years ago.
Yes, I went to that.
It's beautiful. The opening track of this song, the opening track of this film is called Witch, and they just say the words over and over again, Witch, Witch, Witch.
Yeah.
There's no secret. There's no mystery. We know from the word go what the big mystery is. So the film is very deliberately not about plot. It's not complicated. These aren't complex characterizations. This is not where the experience of this film hinges on. What it hinges on is how it looks and how it sounds and how it makes you feel.
Atmosphere.
It's just totally over the top. It's just it's like being inside a kaleidoscope. The colors. It's one of the very last films made on Technicolor.
Yes. Yeah.
And they really ramped it up. And the sound is just as intense. So it's a real sensory experience more than an intellectual one.
Yeah, it does remind me, if I could companion it with something, I think it would be 1976, it would be the opening credits of Taxi Driver, actually. Some of the same kind of feelings and sensibilities and the rain and the colours and the reflections, and there's a lot going on, but there's not really. It's like...
That thing that if you try to translate it
journey,
into if you try to translate it into language, it almost doesn't work.
You just have to watch it.
Which made it a very strange experience writing a book about Suspiria, because this is almost what I had to say. It's almost trying to write how a poem works.
Yes, yeah.
And the whole point of it is that you can't, because poems are poems, and that's what makes them work. That's what makes them so special. Yeah. So it was an interesting experience writing about Suspiria, because you could do, okay, you know, it was written by this person, it was made here, and this person was the cinematographer, and all of those facts and figures, but none of that has anything to do with really what makes the film work. What makes the film work is our inability to express how magical it is, and that's what makes magic magic.
Yeah, and certainly the cinematography, the look of the film, everything about it, the female protagonist in there, and the sound. The sound is really essential.
The soundtrack's really important to this film. There's a kind of urban legend that Dario Argento asked Goblin to do the soundtrack before the film, and that when they were filming, they played the soundtrack really loudly on set. This sadly isn't true, because it's a great story.
It's a great story.
Goblin did make some music that was filmed on set, but they didn't do the actual soundtrack until afterwards.
Right.
And I know that from talking to the cinematographer and Barbara Magnolfi, who plays Olga in the film.
Yes.
She said, yes, their music was played on set, but the actual soundtrack that we can buy now wasn't actually played on set.
Still, we like those myths. There's always something that surrounds an iconic film. There's always that story.
And that becomes a part of it. I think those legends become a part of the experience. And I think that even whether it's true or not true, what that story really gets to the heart of is that feeling of being really in it, that this is a really immersive film. I spoke a lot to the cinematographer of this film, who's a beautiful man, still working, a chap called Luciano Tovoli, who is generous and kind and extremely talented. He started off working with Michelangelo Antonioni. He was the cinematographer on The Passenger, the Jack Nicholson film, which has a really famous, very famous long take at the end. Just beautiful.
Did he work
beautiful.
On Blowout?
No, that wasn't Tovoli.
Sorry.
Blowout's the De Palma one, so you're forgiven.
I know.
Which is good.
Which I love
is really
that
great.
Too. Even John Travolta.
One of my favourite John Travolta films. Yeah, I think really solid.
It is pretty. Sorry, going off.
That's fine. But Tovoli went from realism. He was like working in a kind of Italian neorealism tradition. And when Dario Argento approached him to do this this Technicolor gothic fairy tale, he was confused. He sort of was like, are you sure that I'm the guy that you want to be talking to? And Argento was absolutely, are the guy that I want to do this, precisely because of that. And they really, Tovoli was very, I mean, I think that a lot of his input into this film makes it what it is.
Yep.
But at the same time, he never for one moment stopped thanking Argento for giving him room to experiment. So the way that this film was shot, there's no post-production. Which, from 2016, that is incredible to think about. There's no gels. They didn't even use gels on light. It was all, they would get wooden frames and staple or nail tissue paper or velvet to them and then shine lights through that. Tovoli was saying...
like it could have really fucked up. Excuse me, but it could have.
He said that look of fear, like a lot of the close-ups in that film, look of fear on the actors' faces isn't because they're acting. He said it's because there were really bright lights shining through tissue paper about a foot away from their faces. They were worried they were going to catch fire.
Or go blind.
Uh-huh.
Which, I mean, if you look
really
at the history, the history
really
of cinema, like a lot of actors and actresses did go blind because of
intense
the phosphate or lime lights, hence the name.
Those really bright. One of the other things he did, and it probably is what saved their eyes, and it's another old kind of movie trick that we don't use now because everything's digital, but to get very sharp, to use those kind of, Suspiria is all dual colours and it's very dark, but very kind of technicolour and very bright. And he would use a lot of reflected light. So he would shine. So the sets were surrounded with mirrors, just floor to ceiling mirrors, and they would shine these bright lights into the mirrored, and then that reflected light is how they would light the actors. This kind of really, so that they would get this really, really sharp light.
Wow!
But apparently the set just looked insane. Like, you know, all of these huge, huge frames with these crazy fabrics nailed to them, and then all these mirrors everywhere. Just, but Argento, you know, Tivoli was always, nobody else would have let me do this. And Argento was just completely, you go for it. Whatever you want to do, whatever you want to try, that's what we'll do.
Incredible.
And I think in that spirit of experimentation, we get that kind of immersiveness, and we get that in the music too.
Oh yeah, but I mean, the name Suspiria means witch, doesn't it? It's a Latin name, I believe.
No, I think it's actually from so the book. It's based on Thomas de Quincey. So Thomas de Quincey's Suspiria. I could see that you're looking that up now. I've just realized that we're not live, so I don't actually.
Oh,
have
that's
to
cool. We don't have to worry about that bit.
If you do a search for de Quincey, or even just do a search on that page, Q U I N C E Y, and then Suspiria. Suspiria de Profundis. There it is.
Is this going to be in English?
Sighs from the death.
Sighs, sorry, yes.
So, mother of sighs. So, Suspiria, so there's three sisters. Yep.
Okay.
We can start this now.
No, that's good. No, look, okay. So the word Suspiria means sighs.
It does. Right? And Suspiria is about, there's three mothers. So, this is actually the first part of a trilogy.
Oh, like Mother of Tears.
Yep, the Three Mothers trilogy. And we find out more about the three mothers in the second film called Inferno. Yes. Where they really get into the nitty-gritty of who these three mothers are. So the first film is Suspiria, and all of this was loosely inspired by Thomas de Quincey, who was a opium smoker and wrote some quite amazing works in that state. He wrote a beautiful essay, or fragment, I guess it is, a sort of short work called Suspiria de Profundis, which lent itself the title. By any stretch, it's not an adaptation. And that was the first film. Inferno was the second film, which was 1980, I believe, early 80s. And then more recently, 2008, 2009, 2007 was
Mother of Tears.
Mother of Tears, with Asia in it. So that's the three of them. It was actually Dario Nicolodi who was Dario Argento's partner and is Asia Argento's mother. Mm-hmm. She co-wrote Suspiria.
I know. A lot of people don't.
Yeah, she doesn't get the credit for it. She started, they met quite famously. They were almost, Alan Jones, I believe it was, is very famous Dario Argento expert. He had a wonderful phrase when he was describing the kind of tabloid attraction of Dario Nicolodi and Dario Argento in the Italian media. And he said it was almost like Liz Taylor and Richard Burton, that kind of fascination with them. So they separated after this, but they worked together on a number of films. Dario Nicolodi has a very brief cameo in Suspiria in the airport scene at the start. She was meant to be in the film, but I believe that she had an injury and that stopped her from being in it. It may have been a bit of a volatile relationship, both professionally and personally, for Dario Argento and Dario Nicolodi, but they produce some amazing stuff, including their daughter Asia.
Exactly.
A wonderful director in her own right.
Yeah, she has been in, she was in Inferno, that was 1980. Phenomena too, which is,
I love Phenomena.
One of my guilty pleasures.
Me too.
I love it. I think it's pretty serious.
Jennifer Connelly actually does it. She did a film around that period. I think it was before, maybe after Phenomena. I think it's about 87, called La Toile, which is ballet.
Yeah.
Which is another ballet horror film. Which is, I think it's on YouTube. It's worth chasing down.
Interesting. And she did that, of course, before Labyrinth. So
yeah,
there you go. And of course, Tenebrae, 1982. Dario Nicolodi's in that one
opera.
Too.
She was in Dario Argento's opera.
Oh, yeah. That's got a lot of influences, certainly.
Yeah, she's also in a Mario Bava film from 1977 that came out the same year as Suspiria called Shock. It was, I think it's Bava's last film, and it's really not that well known, and I think it's one of his best. It's not visually as intense as a lot of Mario Bava's early work. He was, of course, a huge influence on Dario Argento. He's sort of the grandfather of Italian horror.
Yes, it says that he this was his last theatrical feature before he passed away from a heart attack in 1980.
It deserves a lot more attention, and I think it's her best film. It's certainly in front of the camera. I mean, I think Dario Nicolodi is really an underrated horror actor. I think she's just incredible.
And what a fantastic year, you know, 1977. Amazing.
Lots of stuff.
It's happening. Not all Star Wars, people.
There were other things happening.
perhaps more interesting things in some ways. But yes, getting back to your book, it's done. It's dusted, so to speak.
It is.
Or at least the duster pages are on it.
I've stopped crying.
Was it tormenting?
It's always tormenting. Yeah. And I think that's more the process of writing. And I'm sure anybody who writes would agree with that, in that it's an obsession. You know, you can't do a project like that unless you're really immersed in it.
And you can't give up on something like that. Like, have put yourself out there. Once you said you've got that publication date and period, you must do it. That's the thing. Yeah,
it's actually, I find it quite a relief to have those kind of publishing deadlines, because otherwise you never let go. It's just something that you can never sort of stop doing, and you can never shake off once you sort of start getting that deeply immersed into a research project.
And what happens to the book now? What happens to you, the book, going on tour?
Yeah, we're hoping to do a Melbourne launch soon. It's gone on sale. Yeah. It has an Australian distributor, so I believe that you can get it at Readings. If they don't have any on the shop, you can certainly order it in from Readings. It's part of a series called The Devil's Advocates. By UK publisher Auto Books, which is a wonderful series. They're kind of like those BFI books, you know, those short little...
Like those, yeah, they're very...
Little small, thin paperbacks. So it's almost like the horror version of the BFI books. And there's wonderful books in the series. There's one on John Carpenter's The Thing, Lars von Trier's Antichrist. There's a beautiful one on Mario Bava's Black Sunday. Great one on... De Palma's Carrie. All the kind of horror classics are in there.
And when you think about it, that's that Italian cinema as well. Like, how amazing it is that it's through the generations now that it's percolated through, and it seems to have affected American cinema so strongly.
Giallo especially.
Especially,
I think I started Giallo. Off in my younger years getting this stuff, getting Italian horror on video. You know, those seven VHS, videos for $7 for 7 days. Well, you just, you know, you're in your early 20s, you're living in a group house, or you're in your late teens, and you just buy things because they're kind of ironic.
And I remember
obsessively getting a film, a Roberto Lenzi film called Spasmo, which had a hanging mannequin. I kid you not, that's the name of this film, this giallo.
Spasmo.
And I used to get Spasmo, and I just watched it.
I was like, that was Zombie by Fulci.
And it was almost this, it's so bad, it's good, it's so bad, it's good. And then suddenly, I think I just started watching so many of these films that I clicked something in my brain, reprogrammed.
Finally,
and I was like, these aren't so bad, it's good. These are just really different from how I was trained. These are really different.
They're not the Hollywood product.
No, that's exactly it. So once I was reprogrammed, there's nothing like Italian giallo film. And Argento's made some of the most famous ones. So Deep Red, Bird with Crystal Plumage, Tenebrae, of course, as you mentioned before. But these films really strongly influenced American slasher film.
There's a
writer called Michael Coven who even calls American slasher film North American Gialli. Something like Happy Birthday to Me literally has the black leather gloves, which are like that key icon of Italian giallo film.
And is it true Argento's the hand in those gloves?
Yeah, that's his little thing. He still does it, apparently. He's
creepy.
There's a moment in Suspiria where Susie, it's actually on YouTube. The opening scene of Suspiria is online, so you can check it out. It's better to watch it big and properly.
Oh,
but if you've never seen it.
Yes.
But she's sitting in a taxi and there's a reflection in the glass between her and the driver, and you can really quickly just see a reflection of Argento's face
black.
There.
Yeah. In his face.
So that's his other little Alfred Hitchcock cameo moment. Right. But his hands are in Suspiria.
His hands are in a lot of things. it's fantastic. And also, as we mentioned, Goblin, the people doing the music, there's also that wonderful relationship that goes through a lot of his films too.
Well, they did the soundtrack for Deep Red, which I found out recently was a massive hit in China, the soundtrack for Deep Red.
But it is so catchy.
It's incredible.
Really, I love starting anything off with that one.
Uh-huh.
There's the two, Suspiria or, Deep Red.
Yep. And even Tenebrae, the Tenebrae soundtrack, I think had a reboot a couple of years ago when Justified. Justified did that song where they sample the Tenebrae soundtrack from. Cool. I can't remember what it is, but I can find it down for you. It's good.
Yeah.
I was in a club and it came on and I thought, why is this? Why are they playing Argento soundtrack? And my friend rolled their eyes and said, oh, this is, you know, come on, this is, you know, this is Justified. You know, oh my God.
yeah, it is. It is Justified.
I'm Justified.
Excellent. That's cool. So the book has happened.
Yeah, we hope to be having
hope to have a launch.
We do hope to have a launch. The wonderful people at Cinemaniacs, I believe that you had Sally on from Cinemaniacs.
Yeah.
Melbourne's trash cinematech, as I like to think of them, just fighting the good fight. And they're just wonderful, wonderful, supportive people.
They've really upped their profile and they've got some great, great content. They've got Maniac coming up.
I'm doing the introduction for Maniac.
Are you?
Yeah,
oh,
I really
cool.
can't. It's one of my favourites. One of my absolute favourites.
What did you think of the remake?
You know, I went when I heard Elijah Wood was doing a remake of Maniac, I was like, I needed to lie down. I went in with a really bad attitude. Like, you know when you go into a film deliberately to hate it?
Yeah, you think this is going to be...
Yeah, and I loved it. I just adored it.
I was surprised. I thought, no, but he's put his name to a few interesting things.
My understanding of him from a few interviews that I read is that he's almost doing that George Clooney thing where he will do the big blockbusters so that he has the money to turn around and then do these more interesting personal projects.
Yeah.
And Elijah Wood just loves horror. And I think he's really good at it. Maniac blew my mind.
Well, I think he's good at it because he's got that creepy look. I'm sorry, but he has those creepy
and
eyes.
He knows how to channel it.
I know, doesn't he?
The original Maniac has one of my favourite actors in it, a chap called Joe Spinell, who's kind of a character actor. He was in the first two Godfather films. He's in Taxi Driver. He was in Rocky. He's in William Friedkin's Sorcerer and... Cruising. He's the sort of really sleazy policeman in Cruising.
Yes,
and I love Joe Spinell. And this was a real passion project for Joe Spinell, was Maniac. But interestingly enough, Maniac was directed by a guy called William Lustig, who was a huge Argento fan. And he'd originally approached, he worked on Inferno. And,
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
He originally approached Dario Nicolardi to be in Maniac, who politely turned it down.
Right. I was trying to look up anything for Elijah Wood, so it's not really helpful there. Sorry about that.
I had a lot of time for Elijah Wood after that Maniac remake. I didn't think that that was the reaction that I was going to have to that film.
No, I was really impressed. I was impressed with the special effects, actually, the makeup effects.
I really liked as I said, one of my previous books was on found footage horror film, so that sort of first-person perspective stuff. And what if you haven't seen Maniac, it's all shot from his point of view, so it's not found footage in that it's not a camera, but it's almost shot like the camera is his eyes. So the only time we see him is if he's looking in a mirror.
Yeah,
or something like that. And that goes back.
It's like a film done on a smartphone. You know, it's got that feeling that it's...
It looks... Yeah, I mean, that trick, that first-person perspective goes back to... there's an... I'm doing this from memory. I think it's Dark Passage. I probably wouldn't want to double-check that, but an old Humphrey Bogart film does the same thing. But what I really liked about... I liked a lot about the Maniac remake, but it felt to me like it took place in the same narrative universe as Nicholas Winding Refn's Drive.
Oh, yeah.
Like, not just the same colour palette, but the same kind of world.
Yeah, very close.
You could almost imagine it happening just a couple of streets over. There was something about... And I really like Drive, so I really... There's something about them. There's something about those two films.
I think it's the soundtrack as well.
Yeah, it could be that
very
beautiful
similar soundtrack,
kind of 80s electro.
Yeah,
and again, that really immersive soundtrack, which I think is so important to
it
a genre film.
It is very important. It gives that atmosphere. And although Maniac's filmed during a lot of that's during daytime, whereas Drive is sort of like the underworld, the nighttime
neon,
of Los Angeles and, you know, City of Angels from Hell or something. What do they call it? But yeah, no, interesting. Those two films sort of, to me, you know, slot together quite nicely.
Yeah.
That could be, you know, relatable for
I like that idea
fans.
Of kind of, just kind of random, like double bills that you wouldn't think would be perfect double bills, but I think that those two could work.
Yeah.
But no, I'm really impressed and really excited, obviously, that I get to introduce Maniac for Cinemaniacs.
I know.
And yeah, they're going to be doing my launch, which I'm really excited about for this.
So what date is the Maniacs
That's actually
screening?
Sold out. That's on the 19th of March.
That
standby tickets are available.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to Cinemaniacs, they've got their own website, but they're also on Facebook. And you can find out there are standby tickets, but I think it's a case of just getting there early and seeing if there's any if anybody's kind of cancelled their tickets.
That does happen.
But that will be
strange.
That
people.
Will be a pretty great night. I think that's a really I've never
and
seen it
launch,
on the big screen.
You, planning that?
Yeah, we haven't got a date for that yet, but I will definitely keep you posted. I'm thinking of having a dress code, which is no black.
Right.
I have to have a Technicolor dress code. Right. I haven't brought this up with Cinemaniac, so this will be the first
time
that they
hear
it.
Or you can wear mirrors if need be.
We can just shine torches on people when they come in, like really close to their faces.
That could be disturbing.
Yeah.
You never know what you might trigger there. A maniac might unleash themselves. You never know. Oh, look, it is so exciting, I think, for genre people who love horror and, of course, or, you know, this type of mysterious type of film. And we did talk off air about something too, the remake. Accordingly, apparently the remake of Suspiria is coming. Apparently it's going to be filmed in August of this year, 2016, to be released in 2017. And it's Luca
Guadagnino.
Yes, it's Luca Guadagnino. He says he's going to reunite with some of his mainstay sort of, I was going to say staff, but cast that he likes to use.
Collaborators.
It's the same thing. Yeah, collaborators. Dakota Johnson and, of course, the wonderful Tilda Swinton, whom I think personally would be just excellent.
I was really down. This idea of a Suspiria remake has been doing the rounds for...
It has for a few years now.
I think that it originally, early 2000s, it was linked to the writer of a film called Shadow of the Vampire.
Yes, I did.
And it was linked for years and years. It was linked for years to David Gordon Green, I know he did other films, but to me, he's always the Pineapple Express guy. I didn't have positive feelings personally about the guy who did Pineapple Express doing a Suspiria remake.
Something quite,
and I know he's done better films than that. Yeah. But I'm sorry, you make Pineapple Express. That's how I'm going to remember you. That's sort
if
of
you like
ended
Pineapple. That's okay.
There was there was talk about doing a TV series for a while.
That's right, yeah.
And then that kind of vanished. And then last year...
I was quite relieved about it, personally.
Guadagnino's name came up last year, about September last year, in relation to this project, which I was excited about simply for the fact that he's Italian.
And it's also he's
and good.
Bloody good.
Yeah, no, these two things
I am
were,
love
these
is
two
just
things were a step forward for me.
Reminds me of 1970s Italian filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. This
it's got the same sensibility and understanding of visual space and all those things that the Italians have contributed to cinema, which is marvelous.
Argento has such a, he's really entrenched in Italian art history. He really understands the violence of Italian opera.
Caravaggio,
he started off as a film critic, so he's very literate. He's worked with Sergio Leone, he's worked with Bernardo Bertolucci, you know, he knows these people. You know, one of Argento's earliest memories, his father was in the industry, one of his earliest memories is sitting on Sophia Loren's knee. So he's very Italian, and I think having another
jealous.
Italian, having another Italian making Suspiria,
knees,
I think it's
sorry.
Things just took
cut that
filthy,
out.
Saucy,
terrible objectification going on.
Oh, I'm sure she.
Have you seen that one? Sorry, so aggressive. But have you seen her serving? There's a picture of her serving pizza. It's just wow.
She's unparalleled. She's unparalleled.
Never. Well, there'll never be a Sophia Loren again, thankfully.
So maybe that's where Argento got all of his filmmaking superpowers from. A small child hanging out with Sophia Loren.
Pizza, yeah.
I'm really optimistic about this Guadagnino remake.
Me too
the
now.
Great, the great. So this has hit places like The Playlist, and a lot of the big horror magazines are really pushing all of this recent news. Because Philippa Hawker, the wonderful Philippa Hawker, did a Q&A with Guadagnino a few nights ago in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Where he said these things. He announced that Dakota Johnson, Swinton was already linked to it, but Johnson was
She's new. Really David Bowie.
The news that it's being set in Berlin in 1977 was new, and he's also said that it will be the most Fassbinderian of his films. I don't even know if that's a word, but that's actually
<It is now.
laughs> that's a super exciting thing. And like it I've said is. To quite a few people, and I think I've said to you already, the idea of this kind of 1977 Berlin, who do you think of? Think of Bowie.
Oh, like, of course. Yeah.
And of course, Bowie, Fassbinder, and Argento all used to hang out. They were hanging out in Munich when Argento was filming Suspiria.
And this is the party that you want to crash.
This is the party that I want to crash. So everything comes full circle.
And it all ends up in Berlin somewhere, or Munich, as the case may be.
One of the things I really like about Guadagnino doing this project that I think will be really interesting is that it's really easy to underestimate. Argento gets a lot of flack for his gender politics because a lot of his films show really glamorized scenes of women being tortured and killed. And maybe that's, Capitated. You know, I'm not going to, that's a fair cop.
Yep. Yep.
But at the same time, Suspiria is without fail one of the most famous and successful and, for me, progressive in many ways, not always, but in many ways, female ensemble films. There's a couple of guys in this film, but they're so minor.
There's so few. It's a female cast. There's so few that back in that time that were completely female, let's face it.
And there's no nudity in this film. It's not one of those kind of sorority house booby films. Not that I have any problems with, you know, some of my favourite films are sorority house. It's not Porky's.
And what was that Israeli one? I've forgotten, but it was Porky's was based on, anyway.
Lemonade.
Yes, that's,
Lemon Popsicle. Yeah.
Crazy.
The early
film.
Canon film. Yep. Yep, I'm with you.
I like them. Well, I know they're wrong.
Uh-huh. Suspiria is not them, though. Suspiria is, it does glamorize the murder of young, beautiful women. And I think that would be a difficult thing to argue that it doesn't do that. But at the same time, I think it shows diverse ranges of women. Yes, it shows that women can exist without a romantic interest.
It does, yes.
It's strong female characters, both good and bad. Mm. I think there's a lot going on. And some of Suspiria's biggest fans. This is something that I write about in the book a lot, in that there's a lot of talk, usually by male film critics, about Argento's gender politics. And Argento himself has said that most of his fans are women. And I would really, just anecdotally, I would really back that up.
I would say so too.
It's a pathway drug. I think it's a real pathway drug for so many women that I know. They got horror because of Argento.
Yeah.
And I mean, one of the biggest fans of this film on the record is Kathy Acker, postmodern feminist icon, the late Kathy Acker, whose book My Mother Demonology has a chapter in it called Clit City, which is basically Suspiria fanfic. She just rewrites Suspiria. The chapter is dedicated to Dario Argento. So my feeling is, like, you want to tell me that Suspiria is not feminist, then you've got to go through Kathy Acker. You've got to sort it out with her dead body.
Dead Kathy.
She'll kick your ass.
She'll be spinning.
She was on a motorbike with tattoos. She'll kick your ass from the grave.
She'd have a chainsaw, though, while she was on that motorbike and...
She'd do it. Cut you. She'll do it. I'm scared of her now.
From beyond the grave. That's a good one too. Beyond the grave. I'm excited because I think at last these films are getting that great crossover, almost, you know, mainstream recognition, which is always good because you can say, hey, I was there and certainly been pushing it, you know, and feel grateful to have that opportunity. And your book will be doing the same. And
I've been really surprised, actually, at the attention that the book's got.
Yes, hurry up.
So it's around, and of course the launch will have buckets of them on sale at the
buckets
launch.
Buckets of blood. Like a Brian De Palma, you know, event. Oh, with the split screen.
Oh, that's the way.
Isn't that awesome?
Love that. No. So good. Split screen.
Yeah. What did you think of his... Sorry, I'm going off.
No, I'm happy.
What did you think of... what was it called? Passions. What did you think of that?
I hesitate to say something so obvious. I'm not into late De Palma as much as I am into earlier De Palma, but I know that makes me sound like a bit of a dick. I like that he wanted to make an old-fashioned De Palma film.
Yeah. I just liked it.
I think it's fun.
The fact that there was something like that came out, two or 3 years ago.
I mean, I really hated Redacted. I had really major problems with Redacted, and I didn't think that he had it in him anymore.
Yeah.
I thought he was gone and done.
Redacted.
Yeah. So I was relieved that he was kind of making the kind of films that I love him for. You know, sort of really proudly trashy.
I enjoyed it. I know it was...
It's not my thing, but I'm really kind of
greatest,
glad that it's...
But I'm glad it was made. Yes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I can agree with that, definitely.
Felt relieved.
Yeah.
I watched as people got up and left. Feeling really you know, they were really upset, and I was like, give it a chance, you know, come on.
I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I'd rather a film piss people off than bore them.
Exactly.
You know, I'd rather a film, and maybe that's where I sit as a critic, is that I'd rather a film try something different and fail than just keep towing the line and just keep turning the same thing.
What do you think of Duke of Burgundy?
Oh, that was my favourite film last year.
My second favourite after Clouds of Sils Maria.
I didn't see that. I heard somebody told me that was almost like a gialli, that it had some gialli aspects.
Oh,
it
was scary. It was very mysterious.
I need to see that.
Lots of those long single takes and God knows what was going on sometimes. I mean, I really was amazed.
Duke of Burgundy is it was easily my favourite film last year. I'm a huge Peter Strickland film, and I think I think that Barbarian Sound Studio was faultless, but I think that Duke of Burgundy was above and beyond. I introduced it at the Queensland Film Festival last year.
And it was film
highlight of my year.
Just didn't get enough screening time.
No,
it is going to be in Melbourne at the Queer Film Festival for screening.
Fantastic!
Which I'm very excited about. You know,
I know that I think Nova did a very short one.
There's also going to be some Fassbender at the Queer Film Festival.
Yes, Carell and Petra von Kant.
Yes.
I believe.
Oh, I haven't seen that in years. But very excited, very
excited. Both of those films actually are perfect. They're just like, if you've not seen any Fassbender before, I think Petra
this is a good time to do it with
like
the wonderful Queer Film Festival.
There's actually
this month.
There's a beautiful Fassbender box set coming out in late March by Arrow in the UK.
Okay.
Who do really, really good curatorial work. They did a beautiful Jacques Rivette set recently. But they're, I've got my eye on their Fassbender box too.
Got
that
your
sounds
eye
crude,
on your Fassbender box.
Your
have
eye
you got
my
your Fassbender box?
Show us your Fassbender.
Did you ever see, what was it called? Was it Hot Water and Cold Rocks? It was sort of like a Fassbender homage film.
No.
Oh. Crazy. Crazy. You've got to see it if you get a chance.
Sounds amazing.
Well, all the good things come from the 70s, don't they?
They
some
do.
Some good things. And particularly we'll look at some European cinema. And Suspiria and Dario Argento being one of those important cultural touchstones. And congratulations, you've got the book done, Alexandra.
Hooray. Thank you, and thank you for having me to chat to.
That's excellent. And so when can people find out more about you? You're on Triple R, Plato's Cave.
Yeah, I'm on Plato's Cave on Monday nights between 7 and 8, and there's a podcast of that as well if you miss the show.
Yep.
And I'm also just shitposting 70s film images on Twitter non-stop.
Non-stop. Cool. So, except for now,
This is actually one of the rare moments that I'm not posting garbage GIFs of 1970s Italian horror films on Twitter.
Love those GIFs. Love them. They're awesome. Yes. Have you got the one where, you know, the art, what is it? Which one is it? Well, the arm gets cut off. It's got the black glove, the arm...
Is Tenebrae?
Yes.
Yeah. That's a beautiful scene. The woman who in that final, spoiler, but the woman who gets her arm cut off is the ex-Mrs. Silvio Berlusconi.
Wow.
There you go.
I like that you said ex.
Oh, yeah. Very ex, I believe.
Smart woman.
Very, very ex. I think she got a fair bit of money out of it.
Good on her, too. She deserves it. We don't hide our dislike for the man. Anyway, not on Sci-Fi and Scream. Thank you very much for speaking to us, Alexandra.
Thank
Helen
you,
Nicholas.
Sonia.
Excellent. This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
You've been listening to a podcast of Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Check out joy.org.au/sci-fi-and-scream for more.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.